Welcome to English Plus Digest, your daily exploration of language, wisdom, and life's intriguing challenges. I'm Danny, here to guide you through today's episode, where we delve into a rich variety of topics. From the proactive power of prevention to the resilience echoed in the words of Franklin D. Roosevelt, we explore how simple sayings can have profound impacts on our lives. We'll also unravel the quirky origins of crossing fingers for luck, ponder the ethical quandaries presented by the trolley problem, and uncover the deeper roles of oxytocin in our social bonds. Along the way, we'll tackle common language mix-ups and the nuanced differences between literal, literally, and literate. Each segment is crafted to inspire, educate, and provoke thought. So tune in as we navigate these fascinating themes together in today's English Plus Digest. Let's dive into the wisdom, curiosities, and linguistic intricacies that shape our understanding and our world. Have you ever been in a situation where you thought, if only I'd done something differently, this wouldn't have happened? What if there was a way to avoid some of life's biggest problems with just a little foresight? Would you rather work hard to fix a mess you created or spend a little time preventing it in the first place? Well, today on Daily Proverb, we're going to get into a saying that might make you rethink some things. The proverb, it's simple, but so packed with meaning. An ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. You might have heard it from your parents, a teacher, or maybe even your doctor. This old saying emphasized the importance of being proactive and taking preventive measures to avoid problems before they arise. So, how does this apply to real life? Well, imagine building a house on unstable ground. You could go ahead and just start constructing, but what if the foundation shifts and the whole thing collapses? That's a classic pound of cure situation. On the other hand, if you take the time to test the soil and build a strong foundation, that's your ounce of prevention. It's the same concept with our health. Eating well, exercising, getting regular checkups, those are all tiny investments with a major payoff. They can help prevent serious illnesses or catch them at their earliest stages when they are easier to treat. But it goes beyond just physical well-being. Think of your relationships. Small acts of kindness and open communication create a strong foundation. That's prevention. Waiting until things blow up and trying to mend those broken bonds, that, my friend, is a pound of cure. The same principle applies to finances, our careers, and even our emotional well-being. Little steps matter. Sometimes all it takes is a pause, carefully considering our choices and their potential consequences, and taking actions to set ourselves up for success, not disaster. Of course, life happens and some things simply can't be predicted. But the spirit of this proverb is powerful. It's a reminder that being proactive has advantages. So I'll have you with this to think about. Where in your life could a little extra effort upfront save you lots of trouble in the long run? Let that sink in, and let's move on to our quote of the day that's coming next. Don't go anywhere. I'll be right back. Have you ever felt like everything is stacked against you? Like you've pushed yourself to the absolute limit, but can't take another step? What if you were told, even at the lowest point, there's something to hold on to? That you've got the strength to keep going? Buckle in, because today on Daily Quote, we're diving into a powerful message from former President Franklin D. Roosevelt. When you reach the end of your rope, tie a knot in it and hang on. FDR, a survivor himself, faced incredible challenges like the Great Depression and World War II. This quote isn't about blind optimism. It's gritty realism wrapped in a spirit of resilience. Let's break it down. When you reach the end of your rope, we all know that feeling. Exhausted, overwhelmed, like there's no way out. The beauty of this quote is that it acknowledges that feeling. This isn't about pretending it doesn't exist. Tie a knot in it. That's the action part, the twist. When it seems like it's over, it's not. That knot represents finding something, anything to hold on to. Maybe it's a single success you remember, a person who believes in you, or just sheer stubbornness. It's whatever keeps you from letting go. And hang on. Not glamorous, is it? This isn't about a sudden victory. Hanging on is hard work. It's about digging in, even when it hurts, even when you feel like you can't do it another second. The determination to endure. This quote speaks to our deepest fears and our greatest strengths. It reminds us that even when we think we've reached our breaking point, there might be a little more fight left in us. Sometimes, all it takes is holding on for dear life. So here's my challenge to you. Think about a time you felt utterly defeated. What was your knot? What did you hold on to make it through? And are there places in your life right now where you need to find a knot and just hang on a little longer? I would love to hear what you think, so don't be stingy and share your thoughts with me. Remember, sometimes the greatest victories aren't flashy. They're born out of simple, fierce determination. And with that, my friend, that'd be the end of our Words of Wisdom section for today. And we'll move on to our Word Power section, where we're going to talk about an expression you all know about and a special word for today. We'll start with the expression next. Don't go anywhere. I'll be right back. Have you ever crossed your fingers when hoping for something good to happen? Wishing for a sunny day for a picnic? Acing that big job interview? Maybe your favorite team scoring that winning goal? Well, there's an expression for that. Keep your fingers crossed. But have you ever wondered why we do this and where it even came from? Buckle up, because today on English Express, we're diving into this quirky little saying, and you might be surprised by what we find. So why fingers and why crossed? Now, there are a few theories floating around. Some historians believe it stems from ancient Christian practices, the cross being a powerful symbol of protection and good fortune. Others point to even older pagan traditions where crossed fingers were thought to concentrate good spirits and wishes. Now, of course, in modern times, it's mostly a lighthearted gesture. We likely don't believe we're literally conjuring luck, but it's fun, isn't it? It's a little ritual, a way of expressing hope and focusing our positive energy. The phrase has evolved too. You might hear someone say, "I'm keeping my fingers crossed for you." That means they're wishing luck on your behalf. Or if something's uncertain, someone might say, "Let's just keep our fingers crossed and hope for the best." Now, interestingly, in some cultures, crossing your fingers actually indicates the opposite: lying to get out of something. So context is key with idioms like this. Now, here's the fun part. Think of all the times you've heard this expression or used it yourself. What were you wishing for? Did it come true? Whether it's pure superstition or just a way to express our hopes, keep your fingers crossed adds a bit of playful optimism to our language. So the next time you're really hoping for something special, give those fingers a twist. Who knows? It might work for you. And that was, my friend, our expression for today. But next, we're going to talk about aberration, our word of the day. So don't go anywhere. I'll be right back. Have you ever noticed something so strange and out of place that it made you do a double take? Maybe someone shows up to a fancy dinner party in sweatpants, or a bird starts singing a totally bizarre tune. We have a word for that feeling of things being off: aberration. But what does it really mean? Where did it come from? And why is it such a satisfying word to say? Today on Word of the Day, we're taking a detour into the weird world of aberrations. Aberration stems from Latin, essentially meaning to wander away. Think of a stray sheep leaving the herd. It's that sense of something being off the usual path, out of sync with what's normal or expected. Here's where it gets interesting. Aberrations can be big or small, serious or silly. Scientists might talk about an aberration in data, meaning a result that doesn't fit the pattern. An aberration in someone's behavior could be a sudden change in personality that raises eyebrows. Or maybe you see a bright purple penguin waddling among the black and white ones, a delightful aberration of nature. Sometimes aberrations are bad, glitches or errors we need to fix. But sometimes they're the best part. Comedians rely on the unexpected, Without aberrations in the usual flow of things, where's the humor? Artists love that creative tension between the norm and what breaks the rules. So here's your challenge for today. Be an aberration hunter. Notice those little moments where things don't quite line up. Is it annoying or strangely beautiful? Does it deserve a frown or a chuckle? Maybe even consider being an aberration yourself. Try something new. Act a little outside your usual character. Embrace the quirks that make you unique. After all, without a few aberrations, wouldn't life be awfully boring? But again, it's up for you to decide. And as usual, I would love to hear what you think about that. So share what you think with me on our social media channels, on the website, on Patreon, and let's talk about what you learned today. And with that, my friends, we're done with our word power section for today. And now on to the Did You Know section, where we're going to learn about a very special philosophical problem that everyone can think about. It's not that complicated, but it's definitely a dilemma. We're going to talk about the trolley problem next, so don't go anywhere. I'll be right back. Now imagine this. A runaway train is barreling down the tracks, about to slam into 5 unsuspecting people. It's horrible to picture, right? But here's the twist. You have the power to save those people. The catch? All you have to do is pull a lever that switches the trolley to a different track, where, sadly, it would kill one other person. So the question is, do you make a choice, knowing it leads to someone's death? Or do you do nothing and let 5 people die? Yikes! Well, welcome to Did You Know, My Friends, where we explore fascinating tidbits that will have you thinking twice. Well, this nerve-wracking scenario is called the trolley problem. And it's a classic thought experiment in ethics, a branch of philosophy that deals with right and wrong. It's designed to make you squirm. The whole point is to force us to confront the messy gray areas of morality. Is it always better to save the most lives? What if that one person on the other track is someone you love? What if they're a brilliant scientist who could cure cancer? Does that change your decision? There are no easy answers here. People have been arguing over the trolley problem for decades. Different schools of philosophical thought tackle it in different ways. Some say saving the many outweighs the loss of one. Others believe that any action causing direct harm is morally wrong, even if the intention is good. Here's the thing. While the trolley problem is extreme, it reflects dilemmas we face in smaller ways. Do we donate to a cause that helps many, even knowing some money is wasted due to inefficiency? Do we prioritize our own happiness if it risks hurting someone close to us? Life constantly dishes out less dramatic but still tricky moral puzzles. So here's something to chew on. Imagine yourself facing the trolley problem. What choice would you make? And more importantly, why? And I don't have to remind you, my friends, that I would love to hear what you think about that. So share it with me. And I promise you, very soon we will have a dedicated community for English Plus where we can talk in a safe environment, in a safe community. I'm working on it and I'm going to announce it soon. And of course, I'm going to tell you exactly where to go and how it works. But for now, that was the trolley problem. And we're not done with the Did You Know section, but now we'll get to something a little bit more personal, something that has to do with yourself. And it has to do with all of us. We're going to talk about the love hormone next. So don't go anywhere. I'll be right back. Have you ever felt that strong pull of connection with a friend, a family member, even your pet? That warm, fuzzy feeling of truly belonging? What about those moments of intense trust when you just know someone has your back? Well, get ready, because today on Know Yourself, we're diving into a fascinating little chemical that might be playing a bigger role in your relationships than you realize. It's called oxytocin, and it's way more than just about falling in love. Oxytocin, sometimes nicknamed the love hormone or the cuddle chemical, is produced in our brains. Romantically, yeah, it surges during hugs, kisses, and when we get that butterflies in your stomach feeling. But here's the exciting thing. Oxytocin seems to be key to forming all kinds of social bonds. Think about new mothers bonding with their babies. Oxytocin is a big player there. Studies show that even playing with your dog can boost your oxytocin levels, making you both feel more connected. Plus, there's growing evidence that oxytocin helps us build trust, read emotions in others, and feel more generous and cooperative. So, why does this matter? Picture your social world as a giant complex web. Oxytocin might be like the threads that strengthen those connections, making friendships feel secure, families feel close-knit, even helping us form bonds within our communities. Now, scientists are still untangling everything oxytocin does, but what if, along with romantic love, it's a part of a bigger biological system that encourages us to care for each other? So here's a challenge. Pay attention to those moments where you feel genuinely connected to someone. Is it during a deep conversation, a shared laugh, offering a helping hand? Notice how it feels. You might just discover hidden reserves of the love hormone at work, building a world where you feel safe, supported, and truly understood. And with that, my friends, we come to the end of the Did You Know section. And next, we're going to talk about some language. We're going to talk about some English usage. I'm going to help you stop mixing up your words. We're going to talk about literal, literary, and literate. These words may sound the same, but they are different. And we're going to talk about that next. So you wouldn't want to miss that. Don't go anywhere. I'll be right back. Have you ever listened to someone misuse a word and it kind of made you cringe a little? Maybe they said something was literally the funniest thing ever, when really it was just a bit amusing. Today on English Usage, we're tackling a trio of words that get jumbled all the time. Literal, literary, and literate. Now get ready to untangle these and sound like a language pro. Now let's break them down, shall we? Let's start with literal. Well, this one means exactly what it says. No exaggeration or symbolism. If I say, my suitcase is literally a ton, it's sadly not a joke. That thing is ridiculously heavy. And now let's move on to literary. Here's where it gets fancy. This has to do with the art of writing, especially highbrow stuff like novels, poems. Well, I'm talking about those books you pretended to read in high school. Think literary analysis or a literary magazine. That's the word literary, which is totally different from literal. There's also literate. Now, this simply means being able to read and write. If someone's literate, they possess the basic skills to engage with written language. So you can see they are different. But that brings us to the question, why the confusion? Well, because they sound kind of similar. Plus, they are connected. Being literate usually opens up the world of literary works, right? But using them wrong can be a bit of a language faux pas. Well, that's a fancy French word for a misstep. Well, let's imagine a few mix-ups. Saying the movie was so literate doesn't really make sense unless the movie itself was a moving poem. Or if you declare, I'm literally starving, I hope you're not also planning on writing an award-winning novel anytime soon. So here's your challenge. Start listening to how these words are used around you. Notice if they're in the right context. Could you swap in a different word for better accuracy? Little tweaks like this make a big difference over time, improving your communication and boosting your English confidence. And now, my friends, we'll move on to the next segment of this section, and we'll talk about common mistakes we make when we use the word much. You wouldn't want to miss that. Stay with me. I'll be right back. Have you ever felt a little unsure about a word? Like, it sounds okay, but something in your gut whispers that it might not be quite right? Well, today on Common Mistakes in English, we're tackling one of those sneaky culprits, the word much. Well, it seems simple, but there are traps you need to avoid to sound like a real English whiz. Here's the main issue. Much is primarily used with uncountable nouns, things you can't slap a number to. For example, I don't have much time. Time is uncountable. Sense. Or there's too much sugar in this. Well, we can't count individual sugar granules, right? Or you can say your support means so much. Now, support is more of a feeling, not a countable thing. Now, where things get messy is where people slip and say things like, I don't have much books. Or do you have much friends? Well, books and friends are definitely countable, so we need a different word in these cases, and this word is obviously many, not much. So let's correct these sentences and say, I don't have many books, and do you have many friends? Now, why the difference? It's a subtle rule of English grammar. One of those things native speakers just know, but can be hard to learn. So here's your language detective challenge. Start noticing how much and many are used around you. In conversation, in that book you're reading, even in ads, can you spot the correct usage and the times it's a bit off? The more you tune in, the more natural it will become to use these words with accuracy. And now go forth and conquer the world of much and many with my blessing. And definitely, if you find anything useful or if you find anything interesting, share it with me anywhere you want, on the website, on Patreon, it's up to you. And with that, my friends, we come to the end of our language section for today, and we're on to the literary echo section, my favorite section, and we're going to talk about a very special poem by Rudyard Kipling. That's coming next, so don't go anywhere, I'll be right back. What does it mean to be strong? Truly strong, not just physically, but in your mind, your spirit, your character. Have you ever felt like the whole world is against you? Everyone's doubting you, and every time you think you've got it together, something knocks you down again? Well, today on Daily Poem, we're diving into a literary masterpiece that tackles exactly those questions. It's Rudyard Kipling's If, a poem that's both a whirlwind and a blueprint for facing life with courage. Now, Kipling was a complex figure, and his works often reflect the problematic attitudes of their time. But If speaks to something universal. Something we all crave, inner strength. The poem isn't about flowery emotions. It's a relentless list of challenges. Can you handle pressure, failure, betrayal? Can you keep your head when others lose theirs? Kipling doesn't promise rewards, just the battle itself. But notice what happens as the poem goes on. It shifts. He's not just talking about enduring hardship, but about finding purpose amidst chaos, to dream. But not to let dreams rule you, to meet triumph and disaster as equals, because ultimately, they're both temporary. And that ending, yours is the earth and everything that's in it, and, which is more, you'll be a man, my son. Is he talking about wealth or power? Some argue it's about finding your potential, living life fully, becoming the best version of yourself regardless of your circumstances. If has been quoted by presidents and athletes, but it's not about being extraordinary. It's a dare for ordinary people like us facing ordinary struggles. So here's the question. Can you see your own life reflected in this poem? What are your greatest triumphs, your worst disasters? And most importantly, after everything life throws your way, will you still find that will to keep going, to keep striving to be a man, my son? Now, I know that you still need more. And obviously, if you haven't read this poem before, I'm going to read it for you. And maybe after you listen to the poem, you'll understand everything we were talking about, you'll appreciate the poem more, and you'll be able to answer this question. And again, don't forget to share your answer with me. And now, let's move on to If by Rudyard Kipling. If you can keep your head when all about you are losing theirs and blaming it on you. If you can trust yourself when all men doubt you, but make allowance for their doubting too. If you can wait and not be tired by waiting, or being lied about, don't deal in lies. Or being hated, don't give way to hating, and yet don't look too good nor talk too wise. If you can dream and not make dreams your master, if you can think and not make thoughts your aim, if you can meet with triumph and disaster and treat those two imposters just the same, if you can bear to hear the truth you've spoken twisted by knaves to make a trap for fools, or watch the things you gave your life to broken, and stoop and build them up with worn-out tools. If you can make one heap of all your winnings and risk it on one turn of pitch and toss, and lose and start again at your beginnings and never breathe a word about your loss. If you can force your heart and nerve and sinew to serve your turn long after they are gone, and so hold on when there is nothing in you except the will which says to them, hold on. If you can talk with crowds and keep your virtue, or walk with kings nor lose the common touch. If neither foes nor loving friends can hurt you, if all men count with you but none too much. If you can fill the unforgiving minute with 60 seconds worth of distance run, yours is the earth and everything that's in it. And which is more, you'll be a man, my son. What an incredible poem. Now, I know some of you might think that this is a little bit too ideal and our times are different. Maybe, that's right. And again, I would love to hear what you think about that. Which parts of the poem you thought really touched you and really meant something to you and something that you really want to be, someone you really aspired to be, and which parts do you think are kind of unrealistic, especially in our times? I would love to hear that. So that was, my friends, today's poem, but that's not the end of our episode. The end of our episode actually is in the spotlight, where we're going to talk about luck or smarts. Which one do you prefer? Which one do you think is the key to success? You don't want to miss that. Stay tuned. I'll be right back. Now imagine walking down the street and finding a suitcase stuffed with cash. Or let's say you aced that crucial job interview. Not because you studied, but because all the questions were things you happen to know. That's luck, right? But what about the person who carefully builds their skills, grinds away, and achieves success through sheer intelligence? Which has the advantage? Today on our spotlight, we're debating the old age question. For a happy and successful life, would you rather be incredibly lucky or incredibly smart? Let's start with Team Luck. Picture this. The world just kind of works in your favor. Opportunities fall in your lap. Things always turn out okay. Even when you stumble, you somehow land on your feet. Sounds pretty sweet, doesn't it? Less struggle, more happy accidents. But here's the thing about luck. It's unpredictable. It might run out when you need it most. And can you really build a life on something you can't control? And now let's move on to Team Smart. They believe knowledge is power. With intelligence, you can analyze problems, plan strategies, and make informed decisions. It seems more reliable, a path you carve yourself, not one left to chance. But I have news for you. Intelligence has limits too. You can't predict everything. Sometimes, even the smartest people face situations where their knowledge can't save them. Plus, does laser focus on one thing leave you blind to those happy accidents luck might bring? So, is there a middle ground? Some argue the ideal is a combination. A bit of smarts to capitalize on good fortune. A touch of luck to carry you when your brain power hits a wall. Now, here's your challenge. Think about your own life. Do your successes feel down to luck or smarts? Can you recall a time when being one wouldn't have helped without a little of the other? And the biggest question of all, if you could only choose one, what would it be and why? And of course, let me know about that. And with that, my friends, we come to the end of our episode for today. I hope you enjoyed today's digest as much as I enjoyed creating this episode. This is Danny, your host, saying thank you very much for listening to another episode from English Plus Podcast. We will have more. We will have some new premium episodes for our Patreon premium members. And I'm sorry, I said I would start with that this week, but you know, things change. And when you hit a wall, what do? You just tie a knot and hold on. And that's exactly what I did. But don't worry, it's not going to be for long. Next week, we're going to have great things exclusive for our patrons. So now is a great time to become a patron, to become a premium member on Patreon. You can find the link in the description of the episode. And of course, don't forget to go to our website, EnglishPlusPodcast.com, where you can expand your knowledge and language at the same time. Never stop learning with English Plus Podcast. This was your host, Danny. Thank you very much for listening. I will see you next time.